time. This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody, on the end of the NBA season. And, of course, interesting road trip for the Mariners. A lot of things going on. And, of course, we'll be here for the next 3 hours. Give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with a lot of headlines. Well, the Mariners got another victory. They continue to win on the road. They've now won 3 out of 4 in this road trip, 2 against Tampa Bay. They went 4-3. Marco Gonzalez going as deep as he's gone this year. 7 1/3 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits. He gets his 6th victory. And, of course, you know, big, good clutch hitting and all that. It was 4-1. And, of course, the victory, Edwin Diaz had to come in and bail out Colome in the 8th inning because he was struggling. But still, Mariners get that victory. They're now 40-23. But some bad news on the injury front. Juan Nostacio has a right knee injury. He goes on the 10-day DL. Danny Altavilla has a ulnar collateral. We'll see if that's going to be, you know, anywhere close to a Tommy John, but at least, you know, it's a strain right now. We'll see where that's going to go. Daniel Vogelbach called up for the minors. Pitcher Mike Morin called up too. But the Mariners right now 4-23, 3.82 earned run average. On the minor league front, Evan White, their second best prospect, a draft pick from first rounder from last year, he was promoted up to Tacoma last night. He ends up getting 3 hits. The Rainiers lose, but White looks like he's rising pretty fast. He's a first baseman. Shohei Ohtani has a second degree UCL injury. That could be a Tommy John. Now, remember, when he was in Japan last year, he had a first degree and he pitched his way through it. Now he has a second degree, and there's a chance they may have to shut him down to the 2020 season. They're going to wait 3 weeks to kind of evaluate where that injury is, do another examination, and it's a bad one. The Angels right now on a hot streak. They're winning, but now they lose Ohtani, who is one of the most exciting rookies we've seen in ages. Washington now 1 game away from the men's baseball team from going to the World Series. They won 8-5 over Cal Fullerton. They play again today. If they win today, they advance, and that's a big story right now. Rams signed all their draft choices, 11 draft choices. Those deals are done, and those are the headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing this Saturday morning?
Doing well. How about you?
Oh, can't complain, man. Everything is great. Just great. First things first, the cornerback Andre Hale. God bless him, man.
That's so sad.
That lymphoma.
Yeah, he's got lymphoma. And, of course, Dave Gettleman, the general manager, we found out of the New York Giants, has lymphoma, too. So,
Story. Yesterday, too. I heard that also yesterday. This is terrible.
Yep,
bad
it really
to
is.
Hear that, you know. Can the Patriots, which they've done before, survive without Julian Edelman?
They can survive. I mean, hey, they survived 4 games without Tom Brady a couple years ago and still went to the Super Bowl and won. So it's not going to be easy because when you think about that, you know, they let Danny Edelman, Amendola go because they didn't want to pay him $6 million. They traded away Brandon Cooks. I mean, they still have guys like Philip Dorsett and guys like that. But, you know, they're really hit hard at the receiving corps because basically their best 3 receivers are gone.
Yeah.
But again, they will get Edelman back. I mean, he'll be back in week 5, but I think it's a big blow. And I think that, you know, again, they're lucky they're in the AFC. If they were in the NFC, this would be tough. But the AFC just doesn't have enough good teams.
Yeah, that's true. You know, because I was looking at that with you, like you said, Amendola, Brandon Cooks, and now Edelman out of that fray. That receiving corps is, you know, you talk about the kid they picked up from the Colts. Mm-hmm. Did he ever live up to that billing to you?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Not even close.
I mean, Philip Dorsett. Yeah, I mean, you know, I look at the receiving corps along with Gronk having these little shenanigans about retirement, staying in, this and blah, 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 what have you. They're kind of thin, Mr. Clayton.
They are.
On that receiving corps side. Mm-hmm. I mean, it means it looks like they're going to have to rely more on their running back, you know.
And remember, they let Deion Lewis go. Now they've got plenty of other options at the backfield, but I think, you know, you can see a little bit of a drift downward right now. You can see there's mm-hmm. problems that they have internally. You know, they've certainly, you know, Tom Brady's not happy with things. Gronk's not happy with things. Players who have been there not happy with Belichick. Team still stewing over not putting Malcolm Butler on the field for the Super Bowl, which very well could have cost them that game. So I think there's a lot of disharmony right now. But, hey, they've had disharmony in the past, and they've been able to overcome it.
True. True, and they still make it to the Super Bowl or the AFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you never doubt, you never count out Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. You're correct about that. I just think, you know, losing that much, it's just going to, I just like to see, because Cordarrelle Patterson is not the answer.
No, not at all.
No.
Not even close.
He's not the guy that is going to come over there and just take up the mantle and carry that over. But we'll see. What do you think about T.O. declining to go to the Hall of Fame?
Childish. Childish and selfish. Yes. And all it does is it confirms the reasons why he didn't go in the first ballot. Because, you know, he wasn't great with his teammates. You could see his selfishness. The two teams that he was there in his prime ended up getting so sick of him, they traded him. And I know as a voter, and I've been voting since 1988, you're not supposed to consider off-the-field stuff. And, you know, off-the-field as far as, you know, the way he lived his life and that, he was clean. I mean, there was no problems in that, but we can't judge that. But when you have to, what we do is we judge if, you know, you become a, I wouldn't say a cancer to a team, but if you become a problem to the team and you're throwing your quarterbacks under the bus and it gets to the point where, you know, the coaches get so fed up with you, they didn't care how talented you are. They just let you go. That's what happened with Tio. And, you know, that was one of the reasons he didn't get in as a first ballot. And it looks like he's still pouting about it. And, you know, you think, and again, being in that room and seeing how hard it is to get guys in. Now, remember, I supported him. I said things in his behalf the last couple of years. And for him to do this, again, I wouldn't change my vote. I know two voters have already come out publicly and say they would change his if they knew that he wasn't going to accept this. Well, I don't change it. He's a Hall of Famer, and I can't change that reality. But what I do say is that you know, he holds back somebody else from going in that would love to be up there and make that presentation and love to get the gold jacket in front of the crowd. I mean, a Kevin Mawai, a Steve Hutchinson, you know, an Isaac Bruce, a Torrey Holt. I mean, you go through the list. I mean, to me, this is just so selfish.
It is very selfish, you know. I think this is the first time this ever happened to the Hall of Fame.
First time. Never happened before.
Yeah. Just crazy. All right, Mr. Clayton, we're going to talk about the AFC West. We talked about the AFC North last week. Let's talk about the AFC West.
Okay.
Let's take a different approach. Looking at those teams right now, let's go on the defensive side of the ball. Does any on those teams, I can think of the San Diego Chargers, that have four players on that defense that you, if you take them away, it would be vital to that team. Or like say they got four defensive stars on their team. Now, the Chargers, I look at them, I think they have four solid players on the defensive side of the ball,
right,
particularly on the defensive line. Can you say the same for the rest of the other three?
Well, defensively, you can't say it for the Raiders. Certainly now you can't say it for the Chiefs because they don't have Derek Johnson and Tamba Ali. I mean, you know, they still have Justin Houston, and then he traded away Marcus Peters. So that's not their strength right now. Denver, I still think, has a decent enough defense, but they've taken some hits in the last couple of years, losing players in free agency. No, I think, you know, the Chargers are an intriguing team because, you know, they lost close games last year. They started out 0-4. They finished 9-3. They've got Phillip Rivers. I think they can be an intriguing team. Their secondary is really good. That's one thing I think is a big strength. Still have questions about their offensive line. Tight end right now is a mess because Hunter Henry ends up getting an ACL injury, and they haven't re-signed Antonio Gates yet, so they don't have much at tight end. But I think they can be a sleeper team. I think that's a team that is kind of under the radar.
Now, let's look at the Raiders right now. Offensively, I think the Raiders are going to be okay. If Martavius Bryant does the right thing, you got Jordy Nelson over there. You also got the other little wide receiver, the little kid from Alabama. I forget his name sometimes, but he's there. You got a decent running back. You got a good quarterback. How do you look on the defensive side of the ball? Do you see any improvement that they're going to make over there? You know, that Khalil Mack is holding out.
I think it's questionable because I think they've added some age. I don't know if they've really gotten really more solid players to add on the defensive side. I mean, they'll be better just because I think that, you know, they realize. I mean, you go back last year, they only added one player, Jelani Jenkins. He was a one-year, $1 million guy, and he ended up not even making the team. So they basically did nothing to make that defense better, and in part it cost Jack Del Rio his job. So there has been more of an effort to get guys, but, you know, I don't know if it's that great as far as their acquisitions.
Yeah, as far as that's concerned, nothing. Turn back to look at the Kansas City Chiefs. You talked about them losing Marcus Peters on the defensive side. Johnson is going to interior linebacker. Up front, did they do enough? Because I know they're still going to run the 3-4 defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom Bailey is a little on the ageable side. And all
well, he's no longer there. They let him go.
Yeah, that's true. He's a free agent right now. He's out there on the market trying to look for a job. But, you know, when you look at it, Justin Houston and D Ford,
mm-hmm.
do you think that defense did any improvements in the offense?
No, I think they take a step back. I mean, I've watched them, when they have the pass rush, they're good, but now they're going to be less on the pass rush, and you can double-team Justin Houston more. So I think that defensively, and again, offensively, I think they're going to take a step back the first year because with a young quarterback, Patrick Mahomes,
yeah.
I think he's going to struggle. I think he'll be good in the long run, but it's going to be a struggling first year. Hey, JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, next Saturday, my friend.
All right, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710. ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. Of course, lots going on this weekend and lots going on this week. Mariners, of course, continuing on the road in Tampa Bay. They'll have a chance to see if they can get their third win and try to put a victory sign on this series and try to get that under control. That, of course, will be one of the big stories if they can continue to do this. Right now, I was looking at Fangraphs, and they're projected to maybe now get to 90 wins season. And of course, so much of that is, as you know, the schedule gets really tough. I mean, this is a little bit of a break with four games against Tampa Bay and four games, of course, I mean, again, with Tampa Bay helping this team out, I guess you could say technically, because what they were able to do is give them Colum A and give them Denard, and those are two big additions, along with giving them now five victories in a week. And so, this is a good little stretch if they can just take advantage of that. The Rays are on an eight-game losing streak. So what's your thoughts on the Mariners? Do you believe, is this a team for real? I mean, at the moment, you can see the big shift. Now, the injuries in the bullpen have to be a big concern because now they're down four relievers now that they have to put Nicasio on the DL, and they don't know how bad it's going to be for Altavilla. That, of course, is a big blow if they lose him because he's got a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. Vincent is on the 10-day DL, but should be back here, I think, reasonably quick, and they lose Phelps for the season. But, that makes them thin, and they only have seven pitchers right now in the bullpen. Kind of an interesting decision with that, so you figure another roster move might be coming up here pretty soon. But, can this really happen? And then you throw in Shohei Ohtani, now having a second-degree ulnar injury that could lead to him being out not just this year but next year. That's not a blow just to them. That's a blow to baseball because he's such a great talent to watch and such a great thing to see that now we're kind of being robbed. It's almost like you go back to baseball and or back to football last year, and I just felt robbed when Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz end up getting season-ending injuries and we don't get a chance to see them the rest of the year. So your thoughts on that? Again, your thoughts on the running game of the Seahawks? I'm telling you, Chris Carson looks great right now. I know Rashad Penny looks really good. Is off to a very good start, but a lot of incredible things we're seeing right now with Carson. He's out there. He is, 10 pounds heavier at 226, and he's moving faster. I mean, you can see he's done a lot of work on his strength. I mean, he's got big bulging type muscles right now on the biceps and thighs. So it's interesting to see. So that's a positive sign, and I do see a lot of good things from Mike Solari. Mike Solari is working very hard and getting the fundamentals of this defense. Remember, there's the offensive line and the blocking, and I can see probably the two biggest improvements this year. I think number one, and again, Ethan Posick played well, but now that he's 322, I think he's going to improve even more because now he wasn't asked to be physical. Now I think he will be physical, and I think it's going to be better for Jermaine Effetti. Now, Effetti still has to get his leverage down. He has to try to get some of the better angles, but I just thought that the move to right tackle and have him in pass blocking kind of moving a step back or so, that just wasn't the right thing to do. That's one that I think that they now have fixed up. And so I think he can do some better things. And I guess the big thing that he has to do is just be more confident. because you can see that, he would either have to set up and kind of flinch a little bit, and that didn't work. And then the next thing you know that here he was, he just was, struggling all year long. Then he gets frustrated, he gets the penalties and all that. So what's your feeling about the Seahawks? Let's go. Is it David in South Prairie? Hey, David.
Hey, John. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Actually, I like what the Seahawks did in the offseason. I really do. I think it was really time for, I wouldn't call it a rebuild, but a reshuffle.
Yeah.
I think they went from one of the oldest teams in the league to now, I think, a pretty young team.
Yeah, I think their average age is going to be in the mid-25s, so that's not bad.
And I think they got a lot of young, hungry guys where you had a lot of guys like Richard Sherman and Bennett and these guys, and I heard Brock Hewitt say something once that made a lot of sense. There's two types of football players. There's the guy who likes being a football player. He likes the fame. He likes the money. He's a mouthpiece. And then there's the guy who just loves to play football. And I think these guys like Sherman and Bennett started out at number two, but then they kind of shifted over to number one. And I think it just started to become a little bit more of a toxic environment, especially with Sherman. He just seems so bitter all the time and so angry every time something went wrong in a game. I mean, he's just blowing up on the sideline, and I just thought it was time for, even if he was a good cornerback, it was time for them to go.
Yeah, and I think that, listen, understand that both Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett love the game. That never has changed. They love the game of football, and I can vouch for that because they never come off the field. I mean, Michael Bennett is in the 30s, and he's playing 80% of the snaps. And so you can see that's the impetus right now that from the love of the game standpoint. That hasn't changed. But also, the love of the game is attached to two things. It's like, one, are you going to win, and do you believe that you're going to win? And I think what ended up happening, and I think it's pretty simple to say, is Bennett and Sherman did not believe that this team could be a championship team, at least in the next year, or at least last year. I think that they had that feeling too. And that's, you hear the same speeches from Pete Carroll, and you kind of say, I'm getting kind of bored of that. And if you don't believe it, and again, the way that things are motivated for Richard Sherman is that he's totally motivated to go to Super Bowls. And if he didn't think this team was going to be a Super Bowl team, and I think that was the case, then he starts to turn on it, and he's trying to give suggestions of how to get it that way. And, you can listen to it or not if you're going to be in the front office or the coach and all that, but that ends up kind of wearing you down. And when things go bad, then you start blowing up, and it just became time. It's like, he tired of things, and he didn't believe, and if that's the case, then you got to move on.
I also like the addition to Schottenheimer as the offensive coordinator. I just think that with the addition of the two tight ends that we got, one in the draft and Dickinson from Carolina, I think it's going to make Russell Wilson a better quarterback. I just think last year was so much improvisation. If we get to more of a running type game, I think he's a much better quarterback. It just seemed like last year, even if when he got in the pocket, if the play was open, he had a hard time pulling the trigger for guys that even were wide open. It just seemed like he was a little bit gun shy. He was always looking to run.
Yeah, and I think naturally you start to think that when you see that the blocking's not going to be there, and you're doing it for so long, you kind of break into some bad habits. Again, and this is not overly critical, but again, you start to maybe think, okay, well, this isn't going to happen, so I'm going to run a little bit earlier than I did the previous year. And to his credit, he's able to make a lot of things happen. But, I mean, you kind of break down the timing of where guys are on routes and all those things. So I think the better blocking and the better running is going to make it easier for him. And I think that I watch it in the four practices that we saw in the OTAs. I think you can see big improvement there. And so I'm pretty optimistic. Again, I say this up front. I mean, this is a team that can make the playoffs. I don't think it can go to the Super Bowl, but I think, because again, I don't know if defensively it's going to be as dominating as it can be, but I still think this is a playoff contender.
Yeah,
more of a wild card than it is a...
I think it's a transition. You got a lot of, I really like this Trey Flowers. I think it reminded me of 2011, 2012. You got a lot of young, hungry guys coming in who want to play. I think you sprinkle in a few veterans like Bobby Wagner, K.J. Wright, Earl Thomas. Do you think he's going to show up next week?
I think so, yeah. Again, I'm 50-50 on it. But I think that, he's made his point. He's not going to help himself by missing the minicamp. All he's going to do is, lose $80,000. Why do it?
Do you really think it really helps these players to hold out for OTAs because of a contract. I just don't see how it possibly would help them in a contract negotiation.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can see one thing. For example, you look at what Frank Clark's doing, and by missing time, you're down with Deion Jordan having a knee surgery and being out 6 to 8 weeks. And then the next thing is that, you know, you're looking at, you know, Jacob Martin, a rookie, and Brandon Jackson being your, you know, starting defensive ends. Well, you make the point, but then at some point you come back. It's like, okay, fine. In the case of Frank, from what I hear, you know, he has been around for a few things. I mean, he missed all four that we saw. I don't think he was on the practice field. And you can understand. It's like if you're in a contract year, I mean, you may show up. I mean, and you may not want to practice, so you get hurt. But it is voluntary. But I think he's made his point. But now the difficulty is trying to get him to a deal.
Okay. And as far as the Mariners, I think now we're going to really see if they're contenders or pretenders. I mean, they've been beating up on a lot of bad teams, which they should. But now, you know, they're going to start playing the meat of the schedule with the New Yorks and the Boston, and we'll really get to see how well this team is.
Yeah, I mean, you get to see a glimpse of it, but, I mean, everything is breaking right for them. I mean, for example, you look at the NL West, and I thought that USA Today did a really good story talking about how bad that division has become. I mean, you know, San Francisco now just crept back and has a winning record, but, I mean, you're looking at a division right now that, you know, 83, 84 wins can take that, and so it's not as tough at least now, and so they're going to start playing those games. So they get that break when they start doing the NL games when they play them. And so this stretch right here is that, you know, don't lose too many games against Boston and the Yankees and the Angels. And, you know, if they can just come out 500 through that, you know, with the 1-1 series against the Astros, and, you know, if they can get a sweep or 3 out of 4 against Tampa, which of course is going to be tough tonight because Snell's going to be on the mound, but or today because Snell's going to be on the mound. But no, I think that things are very positive. And right now, I mean, I think particularly with the Tani going down, they've really put themselves in a position to, you know, get that last wild card. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Thanks, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get a little bit of a preview of the Rams and how they're doing in their OTAs. They got all their draft choices signed. Gary Klein from the LA Times joins us next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Trying to get a hold of Gary Klein of the LA Times. But in the meantime, let's stay with the phone calls and go to Bruce. Hey, Bruce.
What's going on, John?
How's it going?
It's going good. Question for you. The kid from Alabama, I believe he's from Alabama, he got hurt on the ATV accident last year. The defensive lineman, is he still around or what's his status?
Now you're talking about you're talking about Malik McDowell,
right?
Yeah,
right.
Not from Alabama. He's from Michigan State. But no,
excuse me.
Yeah, no, but no, he's nowhere in sight. They've already given his number away, and at some point they'll either release him or get some kind of a settlement. But you know, they've had him on the non-football injury list, but he hasn't even been around for any of the OTAs. I think they've totally given up on him. It's just a matter of time, you know, time and cap, because there are guarantees in his contract, but the fact that he had the injury in the motor and in the vehicle, that puts him in a position where maybe he have to give some signing bonus money back. And so I think what it comes down to is a settlement more than anything else. But no, he's a pick that's not going to make it.
You know, that's a doggone shame for both the team and the young man himself to I would wish the guy the best is all we can do.
Yeah, no, I agree with you because, I mean, you just look at him and, you know, the guy had top 10 talent. He really did. And you look at what a freak of nature he was as far as, you know, his big body and, you know, what you can think he can move. But, of course, we didn't see, at least in the since coming here, because, again, the injury happened before they had training camp. But, I mean, you can see that this guy had some really good potential. But that potential, when he made the mistake of going in the ATM and driving around and having the accident, I mean, it's now caught up with him. I mean, you saw him in the locker room, and, I mean, I know there was a big knot on his head, and certainly I think that a big concussion thing is there for him. And so I don't know if he's ever going to play, but I can guarantee he's not going to play for Seattle.
Are the clauses in the contracts certain things you can and can't do, you know, off the field in your free time?
Mm-hmm. Those are that was an accident like that is something that, and again, they don't have it specifically in there, and that's why what I wonder, because I haven't seen, you know, I got all the contracts, but what I don't see is the language. And so with the signing bonus money, and I have to think that they had some provisions in there, because they gave him his slotted contract, but also how can you give him the guarantees when you can't even guarantee he's going to be on the field? So once they release him, then we'll get a full glimpse of how that all happens and how that's going to go. So I have to think they had to have some provisions in there, because if you're going to be the Seahawks, why would you give guaranteed money and a guaranteed base salary in part in the second year to somebody that you can't even know is going to play? But you're right, it's a shame. Hey, thank you for the call. And joining us right now is Gary Klein of the L.A. Times. And so, Gary, boy, it was funny how the typical thing that they do with the Rams now is that they wait till the end of the OTAs or the minicamp and they get their guys signed. But the fact they didn't have a first or second round pick, I just went into the database. And what did they chop off? Like about $300,000 or $400,000 of cap room as far as what they lose? Because I think it went from like about 2.8 to like 2.1 or something like that. Because, it was 11 draft choices, but, third, fourth round picks and a bunch of sixth and sevenths.
Yeah, this is typical of the Rams. I don't think it has anything to do with these guys holding out. They just like to get it done and have them all formally sign on one day. But that is a pretty big draft class for a team that didn't have those marquee picks. The thing is, with the offseason acquisitions they've made, in terms of trades and free agents, a lot of these rookies, they're going to have a really tough time. It's tough to make an NFL roster anyway, but I think for some of these guys picked in the lower rounds, they're definitely candidates for the practice squad unless that they can really make an impact on special teams.
So how do the guys look right now? I mean, you see on the field, and I guess we start with the defense because that's the most intriguing, one of the most intriguing stories of the entire offseason league-wide. They pick up Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, and Ndamukong Suh. How good do they look on defense?
Well, John, it is difficult at this time just because they're not in pads, they're not tackling, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But you can certainly see in Talib and Peters, the experience and that looks like it's going to be a very dynamic combination. I think the signing of Sam Shields, if he can stay healthy with those concussion issues, is going to give them some real depth. And Sue looks, looks like he's buying in. He looks like he's been pretty attentive in communication with Michael Brockers along that defensive line. But of course, the big question for them is how is Sue going to play alongside Aaron Donald? And I don't think we're going to see Aaron Donald till at some point in training camp.
Because now it's like, okay, the good news is they get their draft choices done and they still have $2.1 million of cap room, but that's not going to satisfy cap-wise because they have to make some moves to get what could be a $20 million a year contract in there.
Well, when you talk to the Rams, they always talk about that never is an issue. Getting a guy, there's always ways to get people under the cap. You can't just keep adding players indiscriminately without making some moves. But in terms of the way they structure contracts or the ability to restructure others, that doesn't seem to be the issue at this point. The issue is, where each side apparently stands. And just given the way this is going, the speculation on how much Donald is going to command, the Rams don't seem to be in any hurry to give him, the number that he wants. And as history has proven, he's not in any hurry necessarily to get into camp. So the mandatory mini camp is coming up next week. Last year, Donald showed up for that to avoid a fine, but didn't participate. This year, it'll be interesting to see if he takes that tact or just, says, forget it, I'll see you during training camp.
What do you think it is? Is it kind of just a waiting game to see if Mac or Donald becomes the first player to get $20 million a year on defense?
I think that plays into it. I don't know that it's necessarily the, overriding issue because, if the Rams really wanted to get it done on some level, they could throw out a number, that is just so above the market that it would be foolish for him not to take it. But, at this point, I think there is that watching and waiting, who's gonna flinch first. And I think if you look around the league, these are two defensive players, game-changing type defensive players that everyone's watching, and they're going to reset the market, you know, in terms of a non-quarterback. And both of them are represented by experienced agents, and I'm guessing they're watching each other to see what's going to happen. But at one, you know, at a certain point, I think Donald is gonna have to make a decision, because there is that rule that if you're not in camp, you know, 30 days before the opener, then you lose a year towards your free agency, towards your unrestricted free agency. And by holding out last year, you know, I think there are some people that are watching this that are going, you know, maybe Donald played his cards or used leverage he didn't have too early. So we'll have to see how that plays out come the summer.
How's the second year now with all the changes in that looking like? Because obviously the Rams were one of the great stories last year. Sean McVay is now almost the coach that everybody would like to hire if you're looking for a coach. I mean, how is that magic continuing?
It seems to be, you know, pretty firmly embedded and entrenched. And I think the addition of players like Aqib Talib, who has so much experience, has played for Wade Phillips, you know, has a Super Bowl championship. Bringing players like him into the fold with young, talented players like Marcus Peters, it seems like they're, you know, they have an opportunity to really build on that and kind of make the Rams a destination team. You know, no one would have thought that a couple of years ago when they came back to L.A. The only thing they really had to sell was the fact that they were in Los Angeles and that that might be attractive to other players. But now they've got a young coach, like you said, who's kind of the envy of the league, and they're moving towards, you know, moving into a new stadium in a couple of years and kind of all the excitement that that brings. Not that that necessarily affects young, you know, players and why they move. But all of those things are adding up to the fact that the Rams, where people were dismissed as why would I want to go play for them a few years ago, now looks like a very hot destination. Of course, if they can continue to do what they did last year.
Yeah. What do you see as far as possible improvements for Jared Goff?
Well, I think just another year playing for McVay and the confidence that that brings. I'm of the opinion that Goff really improved last year, but I think much of that could be attributed to the fact that he was in a system that was so quarterback friendly with a play caller who really knows what he's doing. And the fact that he'll be in that system again, he now knows it. He knows the terminology. He knows everything that McVay is expecting. And they went out and they didn't just stand pat. They went out and got another receiver in Brandon Cooks. So he steps in for Sammy Watkins. How that changes the dynamic of the offense remains to be seen. But, you know, Goff is in a situation where he doesn't have to get to know a lot that he didn't, you know, learn last year. And I think that's going to be a huge advantage for him. The fact that their offensive line stayed entirely healthy the whole season, not one starter missed a game, is incredible. The important one being left tackle Andrew Whitworth. If that training staff and can keep those guys healthy, and the Rams experience the same kind of luck on the field they did last year in terms of avoiding those kinds of injuries, then Goff is set up to have a really good season.
Now, this may be a kind of an insider type of thing, how ironic is it that you know, here's Julian Edelman, he gets a 4-game suspension. Danny Amendola goes to Miami. They make the Brandon Cooks trade during draft day, and so now Kenny Britt, the former Ram, is now a prominent figure in the in the Patriots offense. Knowing how Kenny Britt can be like the biggest headache for any coach.
Well, you know, it's funny because now I only covered Kenny for the one season when the Rams came back. He is a character, and I have to say, when covering the Super Bowl this last year, I got an opportunity to speak with him on media night. And you know, from afar, I thought, well, you know, maybe the situation with Cleveland, you know, this is going to be the ultimate Bill Belichick, you know, reclamation project, right? We've seen what's happened with some other guys who've had some issues in their careers, and they get into that Patriot system and they all of a sudden turn into really valuable, disciplined players. But with Britt, that just didn't happen last year. He never got that opportunity, or they never gave him that opportunity. And as you mentioned, now to think that the Patriots, with all that's gone on, and you know, with a quarterback like Tom Brady, a tight end like Rob Gronkowski, they're depending on Kenny Britt. I think from the people who've, you know, watched him or experienced him during his career, there's some real head scratching and some wonder, because if Bill Belichick can make this work, then I think that's just going to add to his legacy.
Yeah, I mean, along with stories I won't get into, or we won't get into, but it's like, I think, you know, this is a guy that would go into the receiver room, you know, the meeting, you know, he'll go probably not on time, and then tell the guys, hey, come on, guys, we don't really need to hang around here. Let's go out and have some fun. I mean, it's like, this is, and now he's a now he might be a vital part in September of what Bill Belichick needs. I mean, it's like, that I think is just hysterical. I still, in fact, one story that I can get into a little bit is that, you know, Hugh Jackson was so sick of him that I think by the OTAs, he was trying to campaign to get rid of him.
Well, I can tell you this, in terms of my experience with the Rams, yeah. Again, he was definitely a presence, you know, in the locker room. And when Sean McVay came in and they started cleaning house or making decisions on who they were going to sign and or not re-sign, that was regarded as a huge move. Not one that looked, you know, had very much, you know, fireworks or anything like that, or caused much, you know, headlines. But that was the part of the transition, I think, that McVay and you know, general manager Les Snead made in terms of cleaning out some of the personalities that they thought would not fit into McVay's way of doing things. And now, for the Rams, they've got a receiver room with guys like Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Brandon Cooks. I mean, you know, again, you talk about how people envy Sean McVay. I think from a professionalism standpoint and productivity standpoint, that receiver room is also or position group is kind of taking strides and moving up in people's estimation.
Yeah,
as well.
No doubt. That's going to be a good thing. Hey, Gary, it's always great to catch up with you. Looking forward to seeing you this summer.
All right. Thanks.
Gary Klein from the Los Angeles Times. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Elle. Hey, Elle, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
So I have a question about running backs.
Yes.
Back a couple years ago, Pete was really aggressive about going after Marshawn Lynch. But since then, we've been pretty passive in free agency. I was wondering if it's something that we just didn't see in somebody like with Garrett Blount, who was really available last season, or if it's all about the cap.
It's about the cap and trying to manage salaries. I mean, again, they were aggressive and it didn't work out. You know, they thought, because they wanted to kind of get a Marshawn Lynch type back, so they paid $4.5 million to get Eddie Lacy. And, you know, they didn't need, obviously, when they had Marshawn Lynch, to go out and get much in free agency for a running back because they had Marshawn. But when his time ran out, then they made the move last year. So, you know, they may have been better served to get LeGarrette Blount because, you know, he's been barely able to get more than $1.25 million or $1.5 million. But they opted to go for Eddie Lacy. And unfortunately, that did not work out. And now Eddie Lacy's still on the street and can't even find any employment. They tried to be aggressive. They thought they made the right move, but unfortunately it just didn't work out. So, you know, and understand, when you have, like they did, I mean, they had like 12 players making $6 million a year or more. You have to be judicious, and you know, you've got a $21.9 million quarterback, you have 7 Pro Bowlers that are making, you know, good money on defense, and so you only have a limited amount that you can go. Now they're going to have much more next year, because I think at the moment they're probably at $65 million as far as what their cap room is. But some of that, and they hope, is going to be eaten up by getting contracts with Frank Clark and Justin Coleman and certainly Tyler Lockett, and they have to do something with Dwayne Brown. But they tried one, and it just didn't work out.
So out of curiosity, though, why do you think they went after Lacy versus Blount?
Simple. The Lacy body kind of fit even though it was a little bit bigger than they thought. I mean, they wanted a 245-pound back, and they thought that he could come in and just pound you. You know, he doesn't have the leg flexibility of Marshawn Lynch, but when he gets going, I mean, he can run over you. Unfortunately, he never got going. And so they thought that, because when you compare, I mean, LeBlanc has a similarity to Lynch. Lacy has a similarity to Lynch. And remember, a couple years ago, Lacy went to the Pro Bowl. His first 2 years, he was one of the top six, seven, eight backs in the league. And he showed the kind of Marshawn Lynch type of style. And so they went for the Marshawn Lynch type of style, but he just didn't deliver.
Yeah, no, that didn't work out. So, well, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Really hoping we'd go get Blunt. So
yeah.
Have a great day. Thank you. Okay, thanks.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.